Welcome to the Hyphen Church Podcast, where faith meets the spaces in between. We're here to explore what it means to belong, to grow, and to encounter God in the midst of life's questions and complexities. Whether you're here to listen, reflect, or take a step forward, know that you're in the right place. Let's make space together for what God is doing in us and through us. Now, let's dive into today's message.
We're looking at how our faith is shaped by experience, by the things, by Christ, the presence of the Spirit, but also the shape that faith can take in our lives. It's not just one and done. It's not just I have faith and that's the end of the whole thing. But faith is something that is active. It's prolonging us. And that last song that we just sang, He Who Is to Come, Christ coming on the cloud with a crown of glory, that's the image that we have this morning. That's where we're going to land as we're waiting in faith for Christ. And I want to read about this moment of expectant hearts, that as we're filled with expectation, as we're waiting in that place for Jesus to come back, how is our faith affected and how can we grow our faith through that? So we're going to look this morning, we're in Luke 12 again, just like we were last week, and this is a little bit farther on, and we're going to be in a little bit about faithfulness, even though Jesus never uses the word faith. That was similar to our last week's message as well. So Luke 12, 32 through 40, it reads this, "Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourself that will never wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moths destroy. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Be dressed, ready for service, and keep your lamps burning, like servants waiting for their master to return from a wedding banquet, so that when he comes and knocks, they can immediately open the door for him. It will be good for those servants whose master finds them watching when he comes. Truly, I tell you, he will dress himself to serve, will have them recline at the table, and will come and wait on them. It will be good for those servants whose master finds them ready, even if he comes in the middle of the night or toward daybreak. But understand this, if the owner of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he would not have let his house be broken into. You also must be ready because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him." This week we're going to talk about the watch of faith and how we can have faith in that moment of waiting, that moment of watching out the window, waiting for Jesus. There's this tension of living in that now but not yet feeling, that Jesus has come, he has died, he has resurrected from the dead, and he has gone to heaven. And then there's a not yet part. There's a part that happens, what comes now, what comes next? How do we do these things if we're waiting in that time for Jesus to come? Be ready for service. Imagine you're getting ready for some guest to arrive, someone that you love very dearly, someone who you haven't seen in a long time, but you don't know when they will be there. You don't know when they'll arrive. You light the candles, you check the window, you warm the food, you rewarm the food, and you sit and you wait, and your heart beats with anticipation. What if you miss them? What if they never come back? Did I do enough to prepare? Did I give them good instructions on directions? How do we sit well when we're not in control of the outcome? If we're waiting on something else, on someone else to do something, if we're waiting in that in-between, how do we live well there? Our culture is built on alerts and schedules and certainty. And really the idea of anxiety is these alarms are going off in our head and we need to fix these things as quick as we can. And our society is built on giving us more alarms. We have a 24-hour news cycle that is just filled with alarms and breaking news. And these things need your attention right now. And then we read the scriptures and we say, well, would you look at that? All of these things are happening, so it must mean that Jesus' arrival is imminent. And we know one thing for sure, that Jesus is coming back, but in the time and the way that he does that, we don't know. And we can have these debates and we can say, well, it's this thing or it's this thing. But the one thing we need to agree on is he's coming back. And what do we do in the meantime? What do we do? How can we wait well? How do we, when it feels impossible, that watchful readiness without knowing when, it's stressful for us. Because it feels like, what am I preparing for? Will we ever see our guest arrive? But there is a false way to watch. There is a false way to be ready. And that's when fear pretends to be faith. We see the signs. We see, you know, especially through the pandemic, faith over fear. You know, don't let your anxiety get a hold of you. Don't let these things go ahead of you. But Jesus is reframing this. He's saying that there is a faith that pretends to be, there is fear that pretends to be faith. That when we are preparing, that when we are believing, we tend to get into this anxious spot where we feel this stress about what's coming next. But before Jesus invites us to true readiness, he really wants to expose that counterfeit faith. Not all watching is faithful. And in fact, some watching is fear in disguise. That what we are in preparation for, what we are in anticipation for, is not something that's lovely and beautiful, but something that is stressful and fearful. There's this anxious watching that we've trained our eyes to scan for threats instead of signs of grace. You know, we think that the wars and famines and floods, that's the sign of Jesus' imminent return. And we stop looking for signs of grace where there is love and there is compassion and there are things growing. Imagine a world where the news looked for signs of grace instead of signs of threats. Can you imagine if we were people that wanted to consume signs of grace rather than signs of threats? But how much different would our culture be, our society be, if we wanted to consume the good news of this world instead of consuming the bad news? The economy's broken. Government doesn't work. There are floods, there are famines, there are wars that we can't control the outcomes of. And yet we still want to look for those things. And Jesus is saying, when you are ready, when you are watching the signs of grace, that's when you'll see me appear. That's where you'll see the kingdom come near. The kingdom is not in the floods and the fires and the famines and the wars. The kingdom is in those moments of compassion and grace and humility and times when we're reaching across lines, division lines, and saying we are people of the kingdom because we see the grace in this. We see the compassion and the love. But anxious waiting, it creates a spiritual, like, hyper-vigilance. I'm not watching because I love Jesus. I'm watching because I'm afraid I'll mess up. We've heard this time and time again. It's an old pastor's thing. The bumper sticker that says, Jesus is coming soon, so look busy. And it's humorous because, yeah, we should be looking like we're doing something. But that puts us in a fear-based faith. And I'll tell you this, that a fear-based faith will either lead to a life of paralysis or it will lead to a life of performance. That we either shut down because we have this fear-based faith that I have to do everything right, and it just says, well, then I better not do anything because I don't want to mess that up. Or then it leads to the other side where it says, we're gonna live a life of performance, where if I do enough, where if I look just busy enough, then Jesus will return and see me as a good and faithful servant. And Jesus is talking to those of us who have this fear-based faith, this idea that we have to have this faith that's based on, well, I don't want to mess up. I know that Jesus is coming soon, but I want to be ready for that. I want to be in a place where it looks like I've completed a lot of things, and I've grown big churches, and everyone's been baptized in my family, and I've given all my stuff to the poor, and all of these things work out well. And that way, when Jesus comes, he will accept me. I will be a good and faithful servant. That is fear-based faith. This performance watching, it whispers, if I miss the moment, then I'll miss the kingdom. Or if I don't do enough, then God won't come for me. Remember that part in the Bible near the end where it says that, you know, Jesus will come to earth again when everyone's done enough work. No, I don't remember that part either. I don't remember that part where Jesus says, you can bring me back faster to the earth if everyone does a little bit more. If everyone just works a little bit harder and loves their neighbors just a little bit more, you can bring me back faster. That's not how this works. That's not how the kingdom comes. The kingdom comes because we are not fear-based people, but faith-based people. We live a life of love and gratitude and compassion because we have faith. We believe in Christ. It turns grace, this performance watching, it turns grace into a deadline and discipleship into exhaustion. And when we want to control our watching, when we want to have a hand in that and bringing that about, it's really rooted in the illusion that staying alert means avoiding suffering. That if I can just control this with my faith, with my own hands, then I won't have to suffer through this. There won't be pain here on earth. But verse 40 is very clear. The Son of Man will come at an hour you do not expect. Only the Father knows. Jesus said he didn't even know. Only your Father knows the moment of his return. You don't get peace by staying ready for every outcome. You get peace by staying close to the one who holds those outcomes. You can't control those outcomes, so you get closer and closer to Christ who has those outcomes in his hands. And so then the difference is huge. Think about an employee waiting for a surprise inspection. The regional manager is going to show up anytime this week for an inspection. Be ready. So the employee immediately panics. They rehearse their scripts. They clean obsessively. They try and look productive at all times. They're constantly checking their watch. They're afraid they'll be caught off guard. Their focus isn't on doing meaningful work. It's on avoiding failure. See, they're not doing things based on love and faith. They're doing things on fear. If I can just avoid failure, then maybe I will be a good employee. Every footstep down the hall raises the blood pressure a little bit. This is the false watching that we're talking about. It's motivated by fear of judgment and rooted in insecurity. It's exhausting. It steals peace. But think about a child at the window waiting for his or her parent to return home. She doesn't know exactly when, but she trusts the promise, I will be home soon. So she pulls up a chair to the window and she watches for her mom or dad to come there. And she maybe hums to herself or draws a picture to give them when they return. And she talks about and plans about what they will do together when they are together again. A child's watching at the window is based on love. It's rooted in love and not anxiety. Thinking about how happy they will be to see him or her. How happy they will be to be together again. All the things they can accomplish now that they are together. Let me tell you about my day and all the things that have happened. This is true watching, motivated by joy and grounded in relationship. It creates peace and not panic. And Jesus knew that we'd be tempted to live in the way of faith-based or fear-based faith. That's why before he ever says, be ready, he first says, do not be afraid. Do not worry. Do not be anxious, little flock. Your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. And so the way that we would say this is that peace begins with identity. Our identity comes before obedience. Before the commands come comfort. He says, little flock, fear not. So little, that's our vulnerability. Little is our vulnerability, how we feel vulnerable in those moments. The flock, he's talking to us about our belonging, about being a part of something bigger. And then he says, fear not, that's our security blanket. He says, you are vulnerable, but you belong, so fear not. You can't hold a lamp in one hand while gripping fear in the other. And that's why Jesus starts in that place, fear not. Because fear makes us miss the beauty of waiting in that wonderment, that watching in faith. We need to start thinking that we're not watching like terrified servants, but we're watching like beloved children waiting for their father or their mother to come home. We watch from security, not for it. Notice the verb, he has been pleased. It's past tense. It's already been decided. He has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Little flock, those of us who are vulnerable, those of us who belong, don't be afraid because your Father has already given you the kingdom and he was happy to do it too. The kingdom isn't some prize for the elite, but it is a gift of the beloved. It is a gift for us. Jesus doesn't say, be ready so the Father will give you the kingdom. He says, the kingdom's already yours. Don't be so scared. Don't worry. Don't watch the clouds and the skies for signs of my arrival. Live now in the kingdom. It's already here. We don't watch so that we can be accepted. We watch because we already are accepted. Living in that kingdom, looking for signs of Jesus. Where are you, Jesus? Come down and save us. There's floods and fires and famines down here. Wait a second. We're already living in that. You have the power of the kingdom, the peace of the Son living with you. So you're thinking, all right, that's great. I love all this. This is good stuff. I don't want to live in fear-based faith. I can change my ways. But how can we do that practically? What does that look like to live in peace? I think there are three things from this passage that can help us create peace in our watching. So number one is to learn to travel light. That comes from verse 33. You can't watch well if you're weighed down. Jesus isn't calling for generosity. He's calling for spiritual agility. If we have to jettison our stuff so that we can live in the kingdom better, then that's what he wants us to do. If we're worried about our stuff, if our fear is based on what can be taken away from us, that's not faith at all. That Jesus is saying, you're going to lose some things here. The kingdom has been given to you, but not all of it's going to fit. So you need to learn to travel light. When our lives are overpacked with excess, emotionally, financially, materially, we are less responsive to the unexpected movements of the Spirit. Think about this. Emergency responders carry only what they need. They don't carry the hospital with them. They carry only the essentials, the things that they need. They travel light so they can respond fast to what the Spirit's calling them to. And when Jesus sent out his disciples, he said, pack no bag, have no purse, take no change of clothes with you. Because the Spirit is going to move in a way that's going to call you to something. And you have to be responsive to it. And the more things that we're holding on to, the more bags that we have to pack, the more moving vans, the more storage units, as we talked about last week, the more we're looking at our barns and rather than holding our bowls, We're not going to be able to respond in the way that the Spirit has called us to. Peace comes not from having everything, but really from needing less. From understanding that the kingdom has been given to you, what more do you want? Letting go of clutter creates a margin for God to move and for us to respond. The second is dress for the doorbell. Stay dressed, have your lamps lit, be ready. This is a posture of a servant who's not only awake, but expectant. We pray for rain, but we rarely carry our umbrella when we do that. That's living a life of expectation to say, hey, you know what? I'm praying for something to happen here. And Jesus, I expect it because you are a good God. You are faithful to us. I want to live in that expectancy. You know, I want to pray for my family's health and then just say, oh, well, that may not happen because we can't protect us from everything that happens. That's fear-based faith again. We want to control every little thing that happens instead of saying, Jesus, God, Holy Spirit, whatever comes, whatever happens, I know that I can trust you through it. I know that you have this and you have us, you have me, you have the family, and I'm not looking to control anything or wanting you to protect us from those things, but whatever happens, I know that you have me. That's childlike faith. That's not a fear-based faith. That's not anxiety speaking. That's a place of trust. That's a place of peace where Jesus can come to us and say, you know what? You can expect me to have you. Lamps don't burn brightly by accident. They require oil and attention. They require trimming. They require our constant attention. And so staying ready is actually a spiritual discipline. It's a life of intentional devotion. We can stay ready by being in the Word, by being around people that hold us accountable, by making community our priority, making compassion and generosity a value that we live by. That if we're meant to be with these people, if we're meant to be here at this church, then go all in with it. Don't be half in and half out and say, well, I'll be here until something better comes along. Commit to the people that God has given to you. Commit to the people that you have been drawn to. Stay ready. Live with intentional devotion with the people around you. It's not just enough to believe in Jesus' return. We're invited to prepare our lives to receive him. To always be in a posture of receiving Christ. And whether that looks like Christ as the immigrant, or Christ as the homosexual, or Christ as, put in your own word there. But how are we accepting of those people around us that Christ loves and we've invited in? You don't have to know the hour, but you have to live like it matters. The third thing from verse 40 is you need to learn to embrace the surprise. I think that if we can embrace the fact that there is chaos and there is uncomfortableness and there is unknown, that we can learn to live with a moment of peace. And I think we live in a world that says, well, if you can just control everything, if everything is known and you don't live in any unknown situation, or there's no chaos, or there's no unpreparedness, then you're going to live a peaceful life and you're going to have all of this joy and all of it's just going to be smooth sailing for you. But that's a pipe dream. We're never, ever, ever, no matter how much we prepare, we're never going to live in a world where there aren't unknowns. And so we've got to make peace with that in our lives and say, you know what? This is an unknown and I'm capable of handling it. I'm capable of growing from this. God is showing me something in this moment that's testing my faith and growing my faith for something bigger and better. And so we learn in those moments that the unknown is unknown to us, but not unknown to God. If we had a date and time, we'd likely delay obedience. And so the thing about it is it's not faith if we know the outcome. We're looking at a situation in our lives and we're saying, this is a really difficult time in my life. This is a moment for me that I don't understand. And if we knew the outcome, we wouldn't have to have faith at that time. Our faith is calling us to live in that unknown. Our faith is calling us to embrace that and say, what am I doing here? What is God preparing me for? My faith is stronger because I don't have the outcome. I don't have the known quantity. I am living in the surprise. The unexpected of the kingdom trains us to live every day as sacred. And the surprise is not designed to provoke fear, but to pull us into faithfulness now. The unannounced hour is actually a mercy. To live through the unknown, to develop our faith is a mercy. It means today matters. It means the difficulties matter. It means every circumstance we find ourselves in is sacred from God. It means our faith is real because it doesn't rely on a countdown. And so what is the shape of faithful people as we wrap up here? What does the shape of faithful people look like as they are peaceful in their watch? Well, here's the really remarkable thing. Jesus says it in verse 34. He doesn't say, where your beliefs are, there your heart will be. Because we think that if my heart is in this thing, then everything else will follow. That my heart is the leader in this situation, and that if I can get my heart into it, then the rest of my body will follow. And this is why people fail to come to church so often. It's because they feel like, well, if there was just something that my heart was pulling me there toward, if I could just get my heart into it, then the rest of me would follow. And I really need a pastor who will touch my heart and pull my heart toward the church. And I really need like programs that will help shape my heart so my heart can lead out and my heart will be there. And Jesus flips the script on that. He said, it's not your heart that goes first, it's your treasure that goes first. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be. Boy, I wish that was untrue. I wish Jesus wouldn't change the way things are in my life, you know? I'd lived so much of my life knowing that if I could just put my heart into it, then maybe the rest of my body will follow. This is a revelation about how human nature works. Treasure determines your direction. It determines your desire. It determines your discipline. In other words, you always watch what you value. If your treasure is the kingdom, your eyes will be open, your lamps burning, your life will be expectant because we are watching our treasure. We're in the kingdom first, and then our heart follows. I think we assume as people that our giving and our spending and our focus are all expressions of our heart. I give to causes that I love, or I spend time with people that I care about. But Jesus is teaching us that treasure doesn't just express your heart, it shapes it. That what you value, what you watch, what you worship, what you pursue is shaping your very heart. It's not the other way around. You cannot lead from your heart. Your heart is above all things deceptive. And so we can't trust our heart to lead us into the things that we want. But instead, we follow the kingdom. We keep our eye on the treasure. And then all of a sudden, church starts to work a little bit differently, right? Because, oh, my heart's not in it this week. We think that I just can't get into it. I just don't know where this is going. I don't feel connected at that church. Well, that's because your heart is there first. You're trying to get your heart connected. You're trying to see how you can form your heart rather than letting the church and the kingdom and God's love shape your heart. Because all of a sudden you'll start to focus on different things. All of a sudden the matters of the church go away and it's all kingdom. It's all, here is Jesus and here's how we can pursue that. What you invest in begins to form your affections, your identity, your worldview. And so it flips this modern thinking on its head. It's not follow your heart. Do whatever you care about. It's lead your heart. Direct your heart toward treasures of kingdom things. Because you'll always watch what you hope in. You'll always move toward what you value. And so we might say it like this if we're going to wrap everything up. Peace is not the absence of uncertainty. It's the result of a heart rooted in the right treasure. So you have to ask yourself, what am I watching for? What am I hoping will show up at the door? The things of your heart or the things of the kingdom? And why do you attend churches? Why do you attend this church? Is it because your heart has certain preferences? I'm going to tell you, there are no perfect churches. There are no churches that will fit every preference of your heart. And so we have to not start with the heart and our preferences. We have to start with kingdom. Does this church look like the kingdom? Does this church get me to value the things of the kingdom? And then our hearts follow that. It's about choosing again and again to put your treasure in God's hands so that over time your heart follows him there. Generosity is not just an outflow of spiritual maturity. It's actually the pathway toward it. That we see people that are generous as mature and wise givers, but then all of a sudden, Jesus flips the script. Generosity is the pathway to becoming a mature and wise Christian as we continue to do that. And there is hope in this, because even when I don't feel it, even when I show up and I don't feel like it, and I feel like God is so far from me, I still can choose it. Faith-shaped people aren't frantically preparing. They're joyfully expecting. They're loosely holding. They're deeply trusting. I want to want God, but I'm not sure that I really do want God right now. I'm not really sure I have the faith to do that. And Jesus says, then start by putting your treasure, your time, your energy, your decisions, where you know it belongs, and your heart will catch up. That is how faith works. It means that when you show up for worship, when you open the scriptures, even when you serve others, even if you don't feel it, you're not faking it. You're forming something deeper. You're planting the heart where treasure is already rooted. Where your treasure goes, your heart will follow. And so the Father has given you the kingdom. You don't need to panic or earn it. You just need to live like the doorbell could ring in any minute, and it will be good for you.